from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
I can't hear anything.
I can hear something.
This is the beginning of the show, though. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Alon.
Yeah, I'm the momentarily compromised Dara.
Yeah.
And I'm the girl Molly.
The girl Molly.
The girl.
Yeah. All right, look at that. I can hear now. It was all my fault. Dials are down.
So I did that.
Let me tell you a story about a man named Alon and the week he's had. About a week ago, my throat started hurting. Like a cold lump of lava was shoved in my throat.
That's a little how I feel right this second.
Right?
Yeah.
It was not awesome. And that transitioned into various sickness over the week. And yesterday it climaxed.
Don't tell me you've gained a superpower because I'll be so pissed.
No, but it means that I've got quite a throaty voice right now, as I think you do as well. And I'm probably going to hack up a little bit during the show.
So indeed.
I got my finger on the mic mute. And we'll see if I have to use it a few times. Anyway, so I apologize to listeners if I cough in your ear. But there's some other things to talk about. Last night, I went and I waited in line. I did my first line wait for some event in a long time. I can't even remember when the last one was. But I went with Johnny to get Halo Reach, thinking that I would take the day off today and I would play this game with him for a large part of the day.
You know how many people were online around noon on Halo Reach?
A lot.
About 70,000.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
That's fewer than I would have expected, actually. But
well, some people work and some people take off
some
from
people
work
take
to,
days
to
off,
play
yeah.
Halo Reach.
I totally took it. It's a good thing because yesterday, man, last night, like I went home early because I was getting sick during the day. I would have just been calling out. Anyway, so I waited in line, got the game. And today, finally, at like 3 p.m., after doing a bunch of other stuff I had to take care of, I finally get to play the game. And what bugs me is that it says on the box it's co-op. It's, you know, co-op. So many players if you're local. Actually, it doesn't say local, but I believe there's two-player local. But there's LAN play, system link. I guess those are the same thing. And online play. But it's really a pain in the butt to figure out how to do it. And I even looked in the manual. How often do you look in a manual? Figure out how to do something. But I wanted to play a co-op campaign over the internet with my buddy Johnny, and it says, you know, you can play co-op campaign over the internet, you just need to do it through custom game / matchmaking. And that's it. That is the entirety of the instruction.
Sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Well, we tried it and couldn't figure it out. And then so, like, he's like, I heard that you have to play through some of the game before you can do it. That sounds crazy to me since they didn't announce that anywhere, but okay, I'll play through some of it. So I played through, and eventually I was like, all right, I'm going to go back and try to figure this out again. And, but then we finally figured it out, and we played like a good 3 hours before I had to come to the show. So not enough, in my opinion. We would have gone further, but Rich even joined us for a while.
Now, this is interesting, and I'm going to apologize in advance again because my speaking abilities are limited this show. But if you look at like the way online stuff is structured in a lot of games online, it's very, in a lot of cases, it's very haphazard. And there's a reason for that. The reason I think that is so is because the kinds of things that we're trying to do, the kinds of ways we're trying to allow people to play online, is evolving and changing faster than what the standards, the interface standards, and the interface designs for basically getting yourself into those things.
Well, traditionally, Halo has been absolutely fantastic with matchmaking. It's been the de facto... Like, I want to say standard, but nobody's been able to copy the same thing because Microsoft right. gives, like, extra allowances to them to do things that nobody else can do.
But now you're having problems. in the
yeah, but it's because they had, like, this matchmaking service set up, and they tried to get everything to go through that rather than having a separate way to do campaign co-op, right. which, like, part of me understands. But there was still, like, no explanation. It was very foreign to me. Couldn't get. And for all I know, maybe it was the same thing as Halo ODST. I have no idea because I've never played ODST. But it was very difficult. And then I looked online, and other people are having the same trouble. It's not just me.
Yeah. The irony of all this is that I'm not going to mention details, but I'm I'm working on online related stuff, actually, like right now.
Oh.
And it's there's
giant pain.
Well, in yes.
To put it mildly. Yeah. That's all right. So anyway, I played some Halo Reach. Rich was complaining that it like didn't look as good as Halo 3
but he's always
or,
complaining, isn't he?
He is always whining. I don't know. It looked phenomenal. It's the same old, like it's more Halo with some slight adjustments. Like if you're a super Halo freak, you'll be like, oh no, this is different. Like no double weapons and whatever. But basically the big addition is you can modify your suit more than you used to be able to.
So
different maps.
I have a question. I've only played like the first Halo game a little bit for like at a party, multiplayer type thing. I know that a big thing happens to the main character, Master Chief, in one of the games. Are you still playing as Master Chief in Reach?
No, Reach happens before the rest of them. It's the old prequel.
Okay.
And so you play as a Spartan.
Okay.
But before Master Chief. And in fact, my character is a female.
Spartan Chief?
Yes, you're referred a Master Chief.
Master Spartan?
You play as a Spartan. Are you doing that to me on purpose? Anyway.
I have to do something with the few words at my disposal.
Your character is known as Noble Six. Noble, I guess, is the name of your troop or group or Marines or whatever they're called. And I guess you're Number Six or something. It's hard to follow the story.
Couldn't
even
dignify the character with a name.
Well, they did it on purpose. Your character is also never seen with its helmet off, but everyone else is.
Everyone else,
they have human, heads, faces, and one woman, actually, Cat, like the main female character who's not you, has like a cyborg arm and stuff. It's hard to tell because you're wearing a suit of armor anyway. But so everyone has like a human likeness, and you don't because you do have a voice. Male and female voice, whatever, will interact in the cutscenes, at least in, like, the first cutscene. And so if you choose female, you'll have a female voice versus male, right? But that's the only distinction, the only time your character is given character, for lack of a better phrase. Otherwise, you're left to whatever you input, which is, your helmet and your suit and whatever. Anyway, so Halo Reach, more of the same. I'm not really going to talk about it for a whole long time, but that's what I did today. Didn't work.
As did 70,000 others.
Yeah, didn't work, just played the game. So, last week we had a lot of stuff that we did not get to at all.
Because we had so much fun answering questions.
Right, well...
That did sound a lot of fun. I tuned it at one point and I really wanted to call in, but I wasn't sure how long you guys were going to keep doing that for. So...
Well, Colin called in.
I know, I heard.
Colin did a call in. Oh, get it?
That's why he called in.
I was getting all those Mario questions right. The ones with Lady and Jumpman and stuff.
The ones that weren't Mario but Donkey Kong questions?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that's what I meant.
Yeah, okay. Very easy to see you get them right when you're not actually answering them on the air. Huh?
Right.
I was like screaming at my computer because I had a live stream on my computer.
Yeah, so. Don't have that this week.
No.
No live stream, right, Norm? No live stream at all. All right, well, next week.
Oh.
Or probably within a few months. I don't want to go in. Let's just be real about it. Okay, so what are one of these many articles?
Okay, there's a lot of stuff, but really the most important thing that we must talk about today. Molly, you've stolen
I apologize.
My important papers.
You handed it to me.
Insolence. Okay. So, apparently, here's a little story. I'll tell you guys a little story. There's this guy, right? His name's Vernon. It's his last name. And he sells stuff on eBay. That's how he makes his livelihood, buying and selling used goods.
He's not the only one. Lots of people do that.
Lots of people do that. He makes most of his money doing this. And he went and he bought a bunch of copies of Autodesk AutoCAD. All right. And these were... He didn't buy them from Autodesk. He bought them from someone else, and he never opened them. And he sold them on eBay. And then Autodesk said, hey... you can't do that. We sue you. Okay? So the reason why Autodesk sued him is because they said that we don't sell software. We sell licenses. Nobody owns our software. So you are not allowed to use our software unless we license you directly for it. Right? And this Vernon guy was like, no, I'll fight you in court because there's this thing called first sale doctrine that says that, hey, you know, if I buy something and I own it, I get to sell it to somebody else. This was actually...
Well, their argument is that you don't own it.
Well, right. So here's the funny thing is that sometime in like 2008, he won the court case.
All right.
Okay.
So let me guess. They appealed.
They appealed. Right? And so the Fabulists, Ninth Circus Court of Appeals.
Ninth Circus.
Okay. Very important distinction there. Finally brought down a ruling. I think this was like yesterday or today. It was really recent. It may have been even this morning. That basically said, no, Vernon, you're wrong. Autodesk says if they put in the end user license agreement that our product can't be sold, then, and we're only allowing you to purchase a direct license from us and nothing more, then the first sale doctrine, which was something that was established by Congress in 1909, does not apply.
But wouldn't the EULA, the license agreement, have to be stated outside of the box?
Well,
otherwise it is transferable.
That was one of the reasons, that was part of his argument. He said he never opened the product. It was a sealed product. He never read an agreement, and so therefore he wasn't bound to the terms of it.
I would agree with that.
And that's what the earlier court ruled.
There's no way you can be bound by an agreement that you don't read.
Right. However, the Ninth Circus Court decided, well, this type of product, because you didn't purchase it from somebody who owned it, you cannot be an owner of it, and you cannot sell it again.
Okay. So they're saying that resale of software is actually not allowed if it's not permitted by the license holder.
Yes. Now, here's a couple of interesting...
by the rights holder. The right. License holder would be the individuals who buy the license from...
Right. So I'm going to read you guys two quotes, and then my throat will give
this
up.
This is going to destroy the entire U sales...
If something isn't done soon, this could destroy the entire world. this Vernon guy's lawyer, his name's Greg Beck, says one of the ramifications of this ruling is that, quote, there is no reason a similar license could not be put into the cover of a book. It wouldn't be difficult for everybody to implement this. Now, here's another little morsel of niceness. So this first sale doctrine that was established in 1909, the actual verbiage of this rule says that it allows, quote, an owner of a particular copy of a copyrighted work to sell or dispose of his copy without the copyright owner's authorization.
It specifically mentioned copyrighted works?
Yes.
A copy of things?
Yes, and also, well, the verbiage specifically mentions the owner of a particular copy. So the court ruled, quote, the first sale doctrine does not apply to a person who possesses a copy of the copyrighted work without owning it, such as a licensee.
Nice. I want to talk a little bit more about this when we get back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
Oh my god, wasn't that amazing?
That was great. Oh my god.
That was your first time.
It was.
Oh, it was good for you, I bet. So another thing we do, other than let Molly enter the show in the second segment, is talk about our sponsor, UAT, the University of Advanced Technology. But I'm not going to do it like I normally do it. All right? Normally just swing by and say you should go to their website. It's pretty rare that I actually go over there and say hi to the folks at UAT. But I've done it once or twice. Today, I want to let everyone know, I actually visited there again, and for a reason that I will discuss in the future, right? I'm working on a big project that I think will be awesome, and they're going to help us make that a reality, I think. And
they seem
pretty on board. So
getting me sick and infusing me with some bizarre mutant power?
No.
spreading the plague.
But anyway, so I was over there to talk to them about a new project, which I think is going to be awesome. Look for that in like 6 months or so. We'll let you know more about it. But while I was there, I get to see, you know, how it's evolved. Aside from having games you can play and stuff, you know, near the food court area, like, there's all these little things that make it way cooler than when I went there, like, 6 years ago. So, how many of us have access to a 3D printer?
Oh, you know...
Anybody?
I have to talk about that, because I have a friend who's going to UAT right now, and she was working a lot in one of the 3D rendering programs that she has, and she made... something from a video game for me. She 3D modeled something called a Moomba. It's from one of the Final Fantasy games, Final Fantasy VIII. It's like this little red lion fiery thing.
Yeah.
And she was able to put all that information in that printer, and she printed out an action figure for me. And
right?
It's the freaking coolest thing ever.
It's made from ABS plastic, dude. It's it builds it layer by layer. I've wanted one of these things forever, and apparently if you're going to UAT, you just get to use one.
Yeah.
I don't know what the rules are. I'm not trying to tell you if you go to UAT, you get full access to some printer that you might not get access to. But clearly some people do, and it's freaking awesome.
It is.
And they do things like, they'll have times where they invite people over to come check out the school, you know, people who are thinking about going there, and have like Nerf fights in the building, and they host PodCamp AZ, they host Tech Forum, which... All right, have you been part of Tech Forum, or just go to them?
Never heard of it. What are you talking about?
What?
What's Tech
You have
Forum?
Definitely told me about Tech Forum before.
No, sir.
Okay, well, other people have told me about Tech Forum then. It's this... I haven't been myself, so I can't describe it well, but they get a bunch of people who know about stuff, the tech-related stuff, and it's just like a free thing to go and listen to people talk. So like the GDC, people get together and talk about video game development.
It sounds interesting. I'd like to participate.
All right, well, you can. Not the one coming up very soon.
I mean, I don't have a 3D printer or anything.
They actually
like that.
Said that I should. After talking to them today, they suggested that I participate in the next one.
Well, you should participate.
So we could, together.
That would
but,
be cool.
But that is not the project, the secret project I'm working on.
I only have a 1D printer.
Okay.
That
sounds
it's not very
awfully
useful.
Difficult. Yeah. All right, so anyway, I just wanted to point out, like, it's not often I go back there. I'm reminded when I do... of how cool it is. So if you are thinking about going to a school like that, you should totally consider UAT because it's actually really neat, as long as you're not super lazy. Because as we've mentioned before, when we've talked about going to school or not going to school for gaming, it's not going to do much for you if you just take the classes and don't do anything. Like, you have to work on your own a lot as well. So
you have to work, like, pretend like you're not going to school.
But
not like
yeah.
It's summer. Not going to school. Like,
you mean pretend you're not going to school and just do the work without them anyway?
You got to pretend like you got to do it yourself anyway.
Yeah.
That's the key.
They give you some guidance there. And they give you access to a lot of cool tools. Dude, they have Microsoft Surface there.
They also have a library where you can check out video games and play video games.
That I don't think is so rare these days.
No, not too much. But, I mean, when my friend first started going there and she introduced me to the fact that they had a library, that she's just like, yeah, I just... check this out from the library. It's a video game. I'm like, oh my god, this is awesome. I need
right?
to go to this school.
Okay. Anyway, enough of that. I'm not trying to like shill them for a good 10-minute advertisement. That wasn't the point. But I really did go down there today, and I really will tell you about this cool new project coming up sometime in the future. Anyway, let's get back to this thing that we were talking about right before the break. This guy who was trying to sell stuff and then couldn't sell stuff because he had the license and not... he wasn't the owner of a particular copy. So what's interesting to me is the language from 1909, the first sale doctrine of 1909, it says the owner of a particular copy. And I am 100% certain, without actually knowing how they did anything back then, that when they referred to owner of a particular copy, that was simply their language for licensee, right? Because they don't, I don't think for a minute when they use the language owner, suggested that the person who buys the book suddenly has the rights to the copyright.
Here's the funny thing is that, let's see, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe, I don't even know if it's on this, I believe that doctrine, in fact, mentioned and specifically excluded licensees.
The doctrine? No.
Yes. However, obviously, there ain't no computers in 1909 like we got computers. So
yeah.
The idea, conceptual, I think the argument that you're constructing is that the idea that
I don't think that they were referring licensees, and I should go review this doctrine thing, see the full language. But this yeah. particular article you printed out is a bit confusing because it implies the way that they use quotation marks in a single paragraph and all that. It implies that this thing about licensee was written from the doctrine, but it's not. It's what the court said.
Right.
So it says the First Seal Doctrine of 1909, which is what you read before, in its current form allows the, quote, owner of a particular copy, unquote, of a copyrighted work to sell or dispose of his copy without the copyright owner's authorization. And then it starts another quote, as if from the doctrine, the First Sale Doctrine does not apply to a person who possesses a copy of the copyrighted work without owning it, such as a licensee, comma, the court ruled. So
right, the court said that, not
the court said
not
the thing about the licensee, and yeah. I mean, unless you tell me otherwise, I'm going to doubt that the doctrine actually mentioned licensee.
No, I believe that it explicitly excludes licensees, but however... Right.
So is it just referring to, like, a book? The person who owns a physical book
no.
can sell it?
Well...
Because what would a licensee
what,
be?
Back then?
Yeah, in the yes, days of 1909, yes, what yes. would a licensee be?
Oh, I don't know. You're licensed to, I don't know, use my my train from stop A to stop B to haul
yeah, but
your
there's,
cargo.
There's no claim of ownership in that train.
Well, right. But well, that's what I'm saying. I think the crux of this is that in 1909, the concept of a licensee was very different from what it is now. Here's another really interesting tidbit is that the court added a statement as if they knew how effed up their ruling actually was and stated, quote, Congress is free to modify the First Seal Doctrine and the essential step defense if it deems these or other policy considerations to require a different approach.
So they basically said we're going by the law because yes. we feel like we have to, but we know this is crazy.
Right. So once again, Ninth Circus Court.
Yeah. So for us, what this means is, let's step back a second. All software is a license, not an ownership these days. Like maybe back in the day, these end user license agreements weren't written in. But nowadays, you know, when you click I agree and you never read any of that stuff,
yeah.
that's what you're doing. You're agreeing to the license.
In fact, the irony of this is that Gama Sutra was astute enough to report that EA in all their EULAs and user license agreements specifically uses the verbiage that you do not own the software, you only are a licensee.
Yeah, that's standard. That is just how all software is handled these days. All virtual works, basically. Anything that you can get over the computer that someone else made is that way, unless it's someone making a freeware thing that they give you full, you know, Creative Commons license or whatever. Even that is a license, I suppose. but basically what that says is any company can step in to any other company or person and say, you can't sell this because we didn't give you permission to, which means GameStop and all of its used game sales and every other company that's starting used game sales, like Best Buy did last week or something, or whatever. We keep hearing about new stores doing this. If this stays the way it is,
right, they can't do it.
They will not be able to because the companies have been trying to stop it and without any way to do it. And this, for those who don't know, by the way, court rulings in the United States are as good as laws. That's how new laws are made. Not so much by Congress writing stuff into, you know, law, because that happens too. But more often than not, laws are created because other courts made a decision. And that's now as enforceable as a law. And they say, no, you can't do that because this court on this day, whatever, this case was decided as such. And so now that is a law. And that means... GameStop is totally screwed.
Oh, yeah. Because,
totally.
I mean, with the whole thing that games are becoming digital now, like you can just buy a game online instead of, you know, through your console instead of having to go to a store and buy the game.
Well, that was fixing the problem for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, before GameStop, like, if this really happens, then GameStop's big earning revenue... You know, where they get their money is going to be through used games.
Yeah. Let me give you some advice. If you own GameStop, sell. sell the hell out of it right now. Because it's going to take a dive. I guarantee that the lawyers from every video game company now are working on this to figure out how to send letters out and say, sorry, you can't sell our games anymore. Sorry. We'll be right back.
To me, Mario, you're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Okay, we are so totally back. The throaty among us.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got this stack of things. You keep wanting to talk about Shank. I saw Rich play Shank.
Yeah.
The demo for Shank.
Yeah, I played the demo too.
It's, to me, it looks like just another brawler. Like you run through, you kick and you punch and you shoot and whatever. And they just keep throwing guys at you and you keep hitting them. And like it's cooler because it's animated well and it's kind of funny.
It's really sharp. I was really impressed. I mean, the mechanics were pretty slick. The visuals are really slick. I was more impressed that they seemed to get the mechanics right. It seemed like there were a lot of different moves you could do, and it remains to be seen whether that depth of mechanical variety is actually designed well or not. But my initial impression was that
What do you mean designed well? What would that mean?
Well, for example, right, like you have three different kinds of attacks, basic ones, right? You've got your shank, you've got your chainsaw, and you've got the guns, right? So
like a close short range, a medium range, and a long range. Right? Well,
it seems that way.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not totally clear just from the short amount that I played, how those actually work together. So let me give you an example of what I meant by my first comment. If it was well designed, right, then you'd have to. The enemies that come at you in the game would have to come at you in such a way so that you, in order to play optimally, you would use all the variety of moves in concert, right? Now, if it was poorly designed, right, one example of how that might happen is if, well, you could just shoot everybody and not ever use the other two moves.
So it doesn't encourage that variety.
Well, I don't know.
One that's just better than the rest.
I don't know yet, right?
I'm just but if that was the case.
But if that was the case, then that's an example of how, I would say it would be poorly designed for the long term. But there's something funny about that game that, I don't know, there's just like the amount of blood. And now, I'm not one to be squeamish, so mind you.
It certainly, however, plays the adult card.
The amount of blood I thought was really, really at odds with the art style and the expression on the characters' faces. The expression on the characters' faces seemed like 100 times more innocent than the volume of blood expelled by them.
Well, I mean,
and that, like, it was, that was just such a weird disconnect.
I think what they're going for is a really comical look. Like, when I say, I mean, like, comic books. Something very extreme.
Right, but it just looks uncanny to me for some reason. It just, like, it's weird. It's like, it's got these big eyes, and I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, yeah, I watch anime. I've watched cartoons. I've watched, you know, adult cartoons and things like that, and some I regret watching, but that's another story.
You know, she is a big fan of that black something.
The black what?
What is that anime you watch? It's got black in the name.
Is
or
it,
seven.
Is it large?
No. Okay, what is the worst anime?
Worst anime? I don't really watch too much anime.
Come on, you know what I'm talking about.
Bible Black?
I've
heard of it.
She
I've never watched it.
The Bible Black.
How do I know of this? And she loves it. And she
I had never heard of it. And she's like, yeah, they're watching Bible Black.
Yeah.
It's like, uh-huh.
Look, all I got to say about that topic is that one time when I was in high school, I bought a copy of Urotsuki Doji, and I didn't know what it was.
I don't know what that is either.
Tentacle porn.
Okay.
Oh, Lord.
And I was like, this was a bad choice. This was a bad purchase. It did not turn me on. There's a lot of things that turn me on. Okay, the tentacles, I'm just not, don't go for that.
Not the one.
My classmate, on the other hand, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh.
He was like, can I borrow this? I was like, right. Just keep it. Just take it. Just take it.
That's my good. Gift to you.
Yeah. Just keep it. I don't want it.
But I know that Molly is a big fan of the Bible Black, so.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, when I get home, I'll have to look it up and remember.
You're the one who told me about this stuff. I had never even heard of it.
When did I tell you about this?
At sometime at Rich's house.
I think you may be confusing me.
No.
Possibly.
No.
The only adult anime that I've really ever heard of that I know people who have watched it was, I think it's La Blue Girl. I think.
Yeah, no, never heard of that one. You keep introducing me to
that's
all these
one.
Things.
That's one. That's one. That's old school. That's, why do I know all this stuff?
I don't know, man. You've got to roll it, X. Okay, so it's very bloody. It seems well made, but you're not quite sure.
Yeah, so short term, very, very positive. It's pretty sharp.
Is that just because of the art style that's very positive?
No. It's because, you know, I think that art style and art implementation is one of the easier things to get right. And mechanical design is one of the more difficult and rarer things to find. And I was impressed that it felt like it seemed to have.
What I'm curious about is what could possibly make a beat-em-up game good these days? Because, like, you know, we all loved Golden Axe back in the day. Everyone thought Golden Axe was, like, superb game.
Right.
And then you go back and you return to it in one of those Sega Ages games or whatever where, oh, we'll play Golden Axe again. This will be fun. It was great back in the day. You play it and it is boring as hell, dude. That game, you just swing your axe or your sword or whatever, and like maybe use your special power once in a while, and you swing your sword, you die, you come back, you swing your sword.
I agree.
Super boring. And at least like one of the Streets of Rage games allowed couples battle, where like you grab the two people, player characters come together and like grab each other, and then one person does like a more powerful kick because they're combined with the person or something.
Well, the beauty of some of the Streets of Rage games, I don't remember if they did this with the first one or if they introduced this in number two, but they actually gave you a larger palette of moves than just the standard fare. And that was what made Streets of Rage, at least two, interesting.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You need to have a lot of moves, but beyond that, like you said, if you just end up using the same one over and over,
right,
it's wasteful.
There has to be a reason and an advantage in using the entire breadth of moves, and there has to be a large enough breadth of moves for there to be basically an interesting decision-making process within the time constraint of, you know, 1 or 2 seconds, which is the time frame that you involve yourself in fighting.
You know, this discussion actually makes me think of Red Star.
Yeah.
Because Red Star, you have a gun, and you also have, you know, a hand weapon.
Yeah, and you know what? Our goal from the start in that game was to make it so that you'd have to use both the gun and the melee, the close-range attacks, in concert in order to be effective. And in some parts of the game, we did it, and in other parts of the game, we totally failed at that. Yeah.
I mean, that's an example. Like, there's sometimes where you just have to use your gun.
Probably a lot of people didn't notice the parts where I would consider that we failed at. But
yeah, but like when I said Shank has its close range, its medium range, and its long range,
right,
that's one way to sort of force that upon the person, because you put them in scenarios where they can't get close to the main guy, or the bad guy, I mean, or the bad guy, if you get too close, will hurt you some way, so it forces you to use long range.
Right, it's intrinsic to the spatial characteristics of the world, and that's good design.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, unlike an actual gun, people then tend to dial down the strength of the gun,
right,
against the enemy, like in whatever game, not just Shank.
Right, and that's how you balance things.
Yeah, exactly. You take something that should be really, really powerful in the real world, make it not so powerful, and yet fists are way more powerful.
Right.
So you give them a benefit to going in close.
Right, and that's the reason why video game design should never, ever, 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 ever follow reality.
You know, I realized this when I was younger playing Commando on the NES. Do you remember this game?
Yeah, it's a tough game.
I thought to myself, I just took this reality. You're one guy. You're the one commando fighting against these armies of dudes. How is it possible, other than the fact that they give me multiple lives, right, because they don't give me that many lives, how is it possible that anyone could play through this game and win, you know, killing hundreds or thousands of these bad guys?
You are a commando.
Well, yes, you are, but I just, before thinking about anything in the game, because it wasn't while I was playing, I was just thinking about it after having played it, I thought, how is that possible? You've got all these guys against you, and you win. And then you go back and play the game, and you realize, oh yeah, my bullets go really, really fast, and their bullets travel slowly, like a shuttlecock or something, like really easy to avoid. And it's something like that where I hadn't thought about it. I didn't realize that was even the case, right? Didn't think about the speed of their bullets when I wasn't playing the game. And then I go into play, and I was like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense, right?
Right, because otherwise, if they shot at your speed, it would be a stupid game.
Yeah, but what it did, it disrupted video games for me for the rest of my life. I was like, well, of course I'm saving the princess and saving the world and decimating this entire planet of bad guys. I mean, I get unfair advantage. I get a gun that shoots really fast, or, you know, some weapon that's more magic than these other people or something.
Right. It's really interesting that you bring that up now, because it's like, oh man, my mind's drawing a blank. Let's keep
well,
going.
I compare it to playing Halo today.
Right.
Where, really, I got my ass handed to me several times, because, I mean, that whole thing, it's a question of AI, right? Like, how well do they hide? How well do they aim? That sort of thing. Right. And they have all sorts of guns. And their whole thing is they come in at mobs. So they have, you know, 10 or 20 people in an area attacking just you. And so if you're smart about it, you know, you can hit them without knowing that you're there or whatever. That's the benefit of being, like, one dude in a very large area. But still, like, you get in a one-on-one fight with these guys, and it's not a guaranteed win. Like, you have some more energy. You have perhaps some more shields. But it's pretty well matched, right?
You see,
and that stuff has changed over time.
You seem to say
more
that
environment.
It feels more like a multiplayer game.
Or Reach specifically? Or?
Yeah.
No, what I'm saying is the enemies are better matched against me than in the old game of Commando, where it's, you know, or
some
Double
people,
Dragon.
Some
or
people call that a symmetrical game structure. I'll talk about
where
that.
Where the enemies are as powerful as the main character?
As you, yeah.
All right, let's talk about that. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. And that's
just as good the second time.
Yeah.
Second
intro.
Just as good. All right. See that? I won't suggest that was sloppy seconds at all. That was just wonderful seconds.
You sound very cocksure.
Perhaps.
Are we allowed to say that word?
I don't know what it means.
No, I mean not that word, but the word that's the last four letters of that. The first four letters of that word.
Oh.
No, the other part.
Well, I mean, I said shuttlecock earlier because that's the thing that you're allowed to
mention. I was attempting to strategically use those four words as parts of other words so we don't get in trouble.
I think we're okay.
But if we can say it,
yeah.
We can say cock.
We've been given the green
light. No. Well, if you refer to it as a kind of chicken or so, yes. You can say that.
Okay. Right? It's always a mystery here.
Like, so, for example, there's a company called Massive Black.
Yes.
And its logo is a massive black cock.
As chicken. In a rooster.
That's right.
There's also Le Coq Sportif, which is a rooster.
Yes. And they spell
and that's
it in
C-O-Q,
French.
I believe.
It's French.
Yes.
Le Coq.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know,
and then, of course, shuttlecock.
And then in New Zealand, I believe their soccer team, they're now known as the New Zealand Blacks.
Uh-huh.
But before they were known as the Blackhawks. Totally true.
That's interesting.
They changed their name for...
because they were roosters, of course.
They were, actually. That was their mascot. But they changed their name.
You know, we're pushing the boundaries of decency here in Chatterbox.
Indeed.
Okay, so we were talking about, or you brought up, right at the end, symmetrical game design.
Yeah, so...
when the enemy is as powerful as the player.
Yeah, so here's an example.
Street Fighter.
I don't really like this word because the word, to say it's symmetrical or not symmetrical, is actually referring to a very... narrow element that's symmetrical or not symmetrical.
And like their power, but not their intelligence.
Right. Well, it's just referring to basically the behavior or the package of the enemies in terms of what they're able to do. But for example, right, Street Fighter is a symmetrical design. Final Fight is an asymmetrical design.
Yeah, because you can beat the crap out of bad guys over and over and over and over.
Yeah, and there's about a million of them instead of just one.
And I think it's safe to say any beat-em-up game, period, is that way.
Sure.
Ninja Turtles, Double Dragon,
personally,
whatever.
I find non-symmetrical game structures more interesting. I think you can do more with them. I think that's more difficult to design a symmetrical game structure that works well. Especially if you're playing one player.
Well, yeah.
That's really hard.
Well, I mean, you always have the advantage of being human and smarter than than the AI in the game.
You know, I don't know why game developers wouldn't... Like, with Halo as an example, they released, they're on their fourth game now? Or fifth game, actually? Fifth game,
Halo?
Right? Yeah. Something like five games.
If you consider ODST a game all on its own, then Reach is number five.
A lot of games. And So at least, you know, half of those have had online multiplayer capabilities. I would, if not all of them, I would assume that a smart idea to make the AI better in future games that they would put out is to just maybe record sessions of multiplayer matches that are going on and just kind of go off of how other people play. Why can't they observe how, like, people are playing multiplayer mode and take that human aspect of it and apply it to their AI in future games?
AI programming is not nearly as simple as you just pretended it could be.
Yeah, it's it's really hard for me to describe to you, Molly, why and how. But all I can really do right now is just assert that, like, it's really, 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 really hard to do it right.
Someday, hopefully, it'll get that way.
Well, one interesting thing is, right, I mean, like, a lot of people, I hear this constantly. This is, like, one of my pet peeves. A lot of people complain about, like, oh, the AI in this game sucks. This enemy is so stupid. I just, you know, I ran up to him and killed him. And these people don't understand that it's not intended to be a realistic, symmetrical match in those types of games.
Yeah, you're supposed to be able to kill it.
The fodder enemy is intended to be a fodder enemy because you get some interesting, unique interactions out of that type of scenario. One interesting side effect is that what happens is people will play a first-person shooter, and they will watch an enemy, and they'll be like, oh, wow, that enemy was so smart. I was throwing a grenade, and he went around the corner and took cover. This is such a great game. The irony of this is that the player doesn't realize that the enemy is totally not doing that. It was just a pure coincidence that the enemy happened to decide to do that at the time, at the same moment that the player threw a grenade, and they're actually, the player is discerning and interpreting
a
pattern that doesn't exist.
There are plenty of games that have characters who react to it.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that those don't exist. I'm saying that in cases, this is very, very common. Players will interpret patterns that don't actually exist.
The only time I've ever been really impressed by AI in a game was Metal Gear Solid 4. You have, like, two different meters. You have your health meter, and then you have a stress meter. And when your stress gets too high in the game, you can't perform the functions that you should typically perform in the game, like shooting. You get too stressed out, and you have to lay down and rest, basically. And one of the big, you know, things in Metal Gear Solid is that Solid Snake smokes, and smoking helps reduce his stress. So you can lay down and smoke, and doing those two things in combination will de-stress you.
Wait, if you smoke too much, will you get cancer near the end of the game?
It does lower your health. That's one drawback of smoking. But one thing when I was playing the game that it was a really heavily heavily guarded area, and I was like, all right, I'm low on health. My stress is all the way up. I need to recover somehow. So I lay down, and Solid Snake starts smoking. And one thing that I totally didn't expect to happen happened, and a guard walking several feet away from me stopped and looked in my direction and said, "Is that cigarette smoke I smell?" And I was like, "You're kidding me! No! Go away!" And
so what's funny here is that Metal Gear Solid 4, or any Metal Gear Solid game, is a perfect example of really, really bad AI.
I was impressed by it. I was just like, I would not think.
They're very simple triggers.
Well, no, it's not bad. It's asymmetrical.
But what I mean is that we say AI is artificial intelligence, right? Like, it's so transparent. Like, they have a very specific and known by the player scope of view, right? You can see on the map what they can see and what they can't see. And if you're outside of their view, they can't see it. So then, like, one of the games introduces sound. So if you're making a lot of noise, then they're gonna hear you. But that's very binary. Like, are you making noise within a certain sphere of their influence, right? Yes or no. And then, I mean, they can make it variable. There's the question of shadows and whatnot. Can they see you? But Metal Gear has always been very much like, the bad guy walks back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, until you happen to go into his cone of view. And then, oh, he gets triggered. And then you hide for a little bit, and he's all like, wonder where he went. All right, I'm going to go back to going back and forth, back and forth. Like, I would venture to say that Metal Gear Solid does not have AI at all.
4, you know, I played all the Metal Gear Solid games. 4 was a bit different because it definitely it didn't seem like the AI had a certain pattern that they followed, like the back and forth type of thing. They were just all over the place. And half the time, another big draw of the games is that you can hide under boxes and barrels and stuff like that.
Totally new to Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but that's...
That was just a test.
Typical of the games. But the barrel was new.
Okay.
But, I mean, you wouldn't even trigger anything. Like, a guard wouldn't even have the slightest clue that you're anywhere near, but you're trying to sneak into an area. You're pretty far away from them, so you throw the box or the barrel over your head or whatever, and you're hiding. Then they walk in front of you, and they stand there for a good, like, minute, staring at the box. And you're like, I haven't made any noise or movement whatsoever. They shouldn't be detected, you know, alarmed by me.
Well, except the
me.
Fact that there's suddenly a box in the middle of the room.
Maybe. But see, that would be smart, because they're like, hey, that wasn't here before. Whereas in previous games, they would be like, oh, yeah, it's just a box. Where'd that come from?
Well, the thing is, why don't they kick the box?
That's what they do in Metal Gear Solid 4, is they'll stand staring at you for like 30 seconds to a minute, and then they'll either give the box a nudge with their gun, or they'll kick it over. And then once you make a slight movement from that, they freak out, and then they toss the box off of you and then start shooting the crap out of you. So
if you consider how enemies behave in the Metal Gear Solid games, think about how it would really be if they actually remembered, for example, that you were there 10 seconds ago.
Oh, okay, no, it would make the game way harder.
Not just way harder. It would destroy the game. There would be no gameplay.
And see, I only played on normal mode.
You have to do that, like, Japanese-style perfect game. Perfect run-through.
I suppose.
Yeah. No, you're right. It would totally break it. But at the same time, like, I play this game that's trying to be super realistic, great graphics, and, like, he's old now.
See,
and he's smoked.
Yeah,
but at the
see,
same time, it's like, these guys are really dumb.
That's the problem with making things look real, is that baggage comes along with the realism.
Expectations of reality.
And the expectations and the baggage of reality have no place in games.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for listening to my rant about UAT. Not much of a rant, actually. But go check them out, uat.edu. Like I said, next 6 months or so, gonna have something cool looming. It's gonna be awesome, and you'll totally want to come visit us in Phoenix for it. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye bye.
You've been to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.